It was really chaotic and crazy, and so it was both expected and unexpected, really. Like, it was a pre-planned baby, is how we call it. That's a kind of a long story, actually, because my partner wasn't sure if he wanted to have children. It had turned out that I had a bunch of like gynecological problems. I'd gone to doctor after doctor, and they just kept saying, like, you shouldn't be in pain, you have a small cyst, like, there's no reason to be in this much pain. And they just kept basically telling me I was crazy, which is par for the course. Even female doctors were telling me, you know, like, oh, it's nothing. But I finally saw this really good doctor, and he said something's wrong, right? Like, you had a surgery to remove this cyst. I had one already, and I had another one, and he's like, it shouldn't be in this much pain, so why don't we look? You know, do you consent to doing like an exploratory surgery? And he went in and came back and said, like, you had like the worst case of endometriosis I've ever seen. And it was so vindicating, right? Because for years I'd just been told, you know, I mean, I started my period when I was 11. And so he was like, it seems like you've had it your whole life. And so I was 26 at the time when he found it. So they cleaned it all up and they said, you know, this is really serious. So you need to think about having kids now, or maybe not for a long time, if ever. I came home and I talked to my partner, and we were still unsure, but he was definitely leaning more towards the maybe we can try having a kid, which I was excited but then nervous about. Because it's different when, like, you have to make a decision as opposed to naturally. They said, you know, like, standard surgery stuff, where you're going to have surgery, you're going to start your period right away. I didn't. And I was like, okay, I want to take a pregnancy test. And for the first time, he had really cued into this, like, struggle. And he was like, I'm so sorry. I know it's hard for you to see a negative test. And I didn't say anything. And he said it was negative, right? And I just shook my head. And after that, I did, you know, I'm a reader and a researcher and like a full-time student always, and so that's how I define myself, as I'm a writer and then I'm a mom. So I guess that's really it. I bought all these books, and you know, I started watching the huge documentary, you know, The Business of Being Born, and it changed the way I looked at birth. I didn't understand any of the medicalization or that C-sections were even bad, but I also feel like it affected my expectations in a way that was really negative too. I really felt, you know, like, prepared and excited, and it changed, but well, I had wanted to see the doctor that had done all the great work for me on the endometriosis, but after watching the documentary, I noticed very quickly that his inclination was to surgery, and I was distrustful of him and immediately found midwives. You know, I called my OB and they were like, we'll see you at 6 weeks. And I was really scared. I had been through a miscarriage very young, and so I was like, I don't want to wait 6 weeks. And when I called the midwives, they were like, oh, come in tomorrow and we'll, you know, get you on vitamins and we'll start all this process. So I felt immediately more comfortable. It was all women. It's hard to remember now because I'm in that like phase where I remember pregnancy being amazing, and I know that it was not at all. I mean, he was huge. He cracked one of my ribs in my 8 month of pregnancy from just kicking it. I mean, yeah, it was uncomfortable. And for me, like, I remember it was a big decision we had to make with my partner the last month of pregnancy. I was like, I want to take maternity leave early. I knew I wasn't going back to my job. We talked and talked about it. And finally, I just said, like, I've been in school full time and working full time my whole life. Like, this is the last chance I get. I want to take the time off. And so we finally agreed, okay, I'll take the last month off. And all I did was sit around and watch, like, 16 and pregnant and eat burritos, and it was amazing but also horrible, because when I took the time off I was like, I'm gonna read all these books and I'm gonna be so productive. And I think I watched every episode of 16 and pregnant because I found it on Amazon and was like, I'm never, because watching that made me feel so prepared. I was like, okay, like, I'm at least better than everybody in this show, which is horrible but it's totally true, because I was terrified, but watching that I was like, this is, I've got this down, right? Like, I have a painted nursery. Little did I know. None of that mattered, but. And then, like, right before my due date, I remember I was just so stressed and tense about it. I have, like, post-traumatic stress disorder and anxiety disorder. And so my therapist had been telling me, you know, like, be aware of your body because it manifests bodily. Because that might have an effect on your labor. But I had read all of these books by Ina May and whoever else, and I had thought, you know, like, I went to yoga and I know how to do yoga breathing, and we have a labor tub, like, this is, it's going to be fine. And so my midwife noticed that I was really tense a few days before my due date, and she said, you know, you're still 3 centimeters, you look good, but it's not time yet. And she just told me, she'd go home, take a bath, drink a glass of wine, like, do, and just calm down. And so I kept thinking my water had broke, and finally they were like, you know, put a pad in, and if it's soaked within, you know, 20 minutes, then your water has broken and come in. And I woke up, I think it had to have been like 11:30, and I woke up and I stood up and I had this huge contraction and just like a bucket of water just came out, right? I mean, and only 1 in 10 women even have their water break naturally. And so I woke my partner up and I said, you know, my water broke. And he's like, no, it didn't. Because I'd been doing this all week, right? Where I'm like, I know. And I was like, no, it really happened. And he said, okay. And so we went downstairs and we left. But by that point, I think my contractions were like 3 minutes apart. I mean, seemed to be going really fast. We went to the hospital. They didn't have a room for us. And so I remember I was out in the waiting room and, you know, there's all these people with like balloons and stuffed animals and it's 1 in the morning. They're waiting to see their happy nieces and nephews. And I'm like holding onto the wall, like trying not to scream, like just pouring fluid everywhere. It was horrible. And finally, like they got a room for me. And like, I knew like something was wrong, right? It was horrible. It was more pain than I had ever imagined. And that was one thing that really shocked me, is I remember thinking, like, I read tons of books and none of them just said, like, it's going to hurt worse than anything you've ever felt in your life. And it's like, why was this not in the books? Like, sure, I have a labor tub and sure, I have, you know, like good breathing skills and a tennis ball on my back, but none of it's working. So we're tearing my clothes off because I didn't want them on my body and they waiting for the labor tub to fill. And once I finally got into the labor tub, that helped for a while, because at this point, I think my contractions were like a minute and a half apart and it was really, really bad and it was really painful. And I just kept thinking, like, nobody told me it was going to be this bad. And then I felt stupid because I'm like, well, of course it was going to be bad. And we had had this, you know, ridiculous, now I look at it and I just laugh, like this ridiculous birth plan, right? Like, we're going to have essential oils and soft music playing and no lights on and no hospital gowns and no hospital personnel and no medication. And it's so idealistic. So this was, I think, like 6 hours, maybe four or five hours. And they were like, hey, we're going to check you. And I thought for sure, you know, I was 6 or 7. I was 4 centimeters. And I just, like, I'm doing all this stupid breathing stuff and visualization and none of it's working. And I finally just, I just can't do it. And I said, like, I need something. Like, I don't want an epidural. And I think because he was taken by surprise and because I had told him so adamantly that I didn't want medication, my partner kind of, I don't want to say argued with me, but was like, are you sure you want this? And I had taken this as like disappointment and like, he's disappointed in me and I'm weak for needing it. And I was just like, I don't care. So they gave me, I think it was Demerol, and they had to like hold me down and give me a shot because I didn't have an IV. And it didn't do anything. Like, it just made me dizzy and made me sick. And I was like, well, why the hell would you tell me this would help? Because it didn't help, and now I feel like I failed and I'm not even relieved of any pain. Now, if my midwife at that point had said the next 6 will go 1,000 times faster, but nobody told me that either. And so I felt defeated and tired. And I remember thinking if I could just get like 20 minutes of sleep, I would have done so much better. And so I was in the labor tub, and I remember, like, clear as day, even now, I had this horrible contraction and all I wanted to do was push. And I said, like, all right, like, I need to push. And they said, no, there's no way. There's no way. And I said, yes, there is. And they're like, you don't want me to check you. And I said, yes, I want you, like, you need to do it. So I got out of the tub, I, you know, dried off or whatever. And they checked me and they were like, oh my God, it's time to push. They said, there's a lip of your cervix that we can wait for, or we can manually push it. And I said, and they said, it will hurt really bad. I said, I don't care. I'm in so much pain. Just do it. Wait for the contraction and do it. And so they did it. And I started pushing and it felt really good. Like, I felt really happy. I was excited and it was still painful, but I was channeling that pain into pushing. And I hit like a second stride or maybe a first stride, because I never really felt like I had one. And I was pushing and pushing, and my midwife kept saying, like, oh, you're doing so good, like, good job. She was being really encouraging. And then she left. And she said, just take a break. And she left. And she came back with a woman I didn't know who looked like a doctor. And the midwife says to the doctor right in front of me, she's been pushing for 2.5 hours and the baby hasn't moved. And I was like, what? Were you gonna tell me? And so the doctor said, well, like, not at all. And he said, no, the baby hasn't descended. The baby, she's 10 centimeters. We moved the cervical lip. I mean, the baby was fine, right? But hasn't descended at all. And so she, I remember the doctor goes in to, like, feel the baby. And it was horrible. Like, the pain was awful. And she said, he's stuck. He's twisted. He's in the wrong position. He's never going to come out this way. So I need to twist him back. And I said, okay, fine, twist him back. And she tried to do it and I just couldn't handle it. And I think part of it's because she was a complete stranger. And now I see, like, it's my PTSD and it's all these things. I mean, she had her whole hand up my vagina. Like, of course it would cause me anxiety. And so she said, like, you need to get an epidural. Like, she can't do this. Like, it's time for an epidural. Like, she just, and at that point I think I fought for a little bit and I just gave up. So the anesthesiologist comes in and, you know, you have to sit up straight and hold your back really still, which is incredibly hard when you have contractions coming every, you know, 45, 30 seconds. And he's like, okay, it's in, wait 20 minutes and, you know, it'll start to feel much better. And 20 minutes pass and I'm like, I still feel everything. And the thing that was bothering me the most is that the nurses didn't believe me. And I was like, no, I'm telling you, I feel everything. And so the anesthesiologist came back and said, oh my God, you're right. He was really nice. And he did it a second time. And the second time it worked. And so I was pushing and it was the same thing. It was so much harder because I couldn't feel anything. But I had the midwife I liked and, you know, my partner, and they were holding my legs back. And it was so weird because I was pushing something I couldn't feel. But they kept saying, like, you're doing good. Like, keep pushing. You're doing great. And they're like, okay, just take a break. Your contractions are slowing down, which I'm sure was because of the epidural. And I was starting to get frustrated, but I wasn't not in pain. I remember when it stopped, the pain stopped, and they said, like, you just had a contraction. I started crying. And I remember it was because I was so relieved, but also because I was so sad. And I didn't expect to be sad when the pain was gone, but I was. I felt, like, defeated. They came back, and they said, okay, you really have to push. You really have to put into this. And I did, and it seemed like things were going well. And then the doctor came back in and they said the baby still has not moved at all, and it had been another 2 hours of pushing. And so I said no, I said I'm not getting a C-section. And the doctor said, I'll let you push another hour, but that's it, this is all you get. And if the baby hasn't moved, we need to move on. And I think a big moment for me that was really devastating was in that between time of, like, we'll let you push one more time, in between the pushing one more time and them telling me, I had sat on the epidural button because they had put it in the wrong. And so I got, like, way numb way fast, which wasn't supposed to happen. And that was also, like, a horrible thing. I remember my fingers feeling tingly. And again, I'm telling the nurses, like, something's wrong. And they're like, no, it's fine. And then finally, my partner sees that I'm on the fucking button. And so then they're like, okay, well, we're going to try pushing again. And I knew that third time I was pushing that last hour that it just wasn't, I knew it wasn't going to happen because I couldn't feel anything. I couldn't feel my chest. I was devastated. I remember I was laying there and I was like naked, and the sun was coming in and I had all these nurses and midwives and doctors and my partner, and I was just hysterical. And I think both the midwife I trusted and my partner, like, at the same time was like, fuck, can you give her a minute, right? Like, she's completely losing it here. And so everybody left and I just calmed down, and I told my partner, I said, it was really hard, and I finally just said, fine, whatever, like, I don't care. So then they started prepping, and I don't remember any of that. I remember, you know, that obviously they put an IV in. I don't remember being wheeled to the room. That's something that I've been trying to conjure, and I just don't remember any of it. I remember being in the room, and I remember just laying there crying. There's all these people around me. I can't move, and the curtain was there. And I remember I just kept saying, like, I want him to go straight to my chest. And my midwife said, absolutely, we can still do that. And I said, and I told everybody that would listen, I want to get my skin to skin. I want him right on my chest. I'd like, that's fine. Like, fine, I have a C-section. Because they said sometimes we move babies and they move right back. And I said, well, just his temperament alone, I can see, like, maybe that's the type of baby he is. And they said, it's, of course, he'll go just like a regular birth. And that's what I kept saying. That was a big deal to me. It was written 15 times in my birth plan. And I had come to terms with it pretty quickly. But I said, like, but I, as long as he gets put on my chest, and everyone agreed that was going to happen. And I remember it was dim because I told them I didn't want the lights on. And so my midwife tried very hard to make it how I wanted it to be in the room. They asked if I wanted specific music played, and I said no, which I regret, because then they started playing, like, you know, pop, whatever. And I was just like, this is horrible. And I'll never forget, like, it's so hard for me. I remember my partner saying that's it, like, that's our son, can you hear our son? And I couldn't. And then all of a sudden, so like I'm hearing the sound behind me, and I was like, where is he? But no one can hear me because I'm so drugged that I can't lift my head up. And I just remember saying, like, where the fuck is my baby? And my partner's trying to stay with me, and I was like, why isn't he on my chest? And he said, well, he was 10 pounds, that's why he wouldn't come out, whatever. And I was like, where's my baby? Like, I don't care how big he is. And when they did finally put it, he was wrapped in this blanket, and I couldn't even lift my head. I remember trying to tell anybody, but I couldn't project my voice. I remember trying to say, like, somebody help me. Like, I couldn't even see him. I mean, it was horrible. It was the worst feeling I've ever felt in my entire life, was like there was this blanket between us, and it was horrible. It was like the one moment I wanted, and it just didn't happen. And I mean, it's ridiculous that it bothers me because we're so bonded, but it still really, it made a big difference to me. And I wanted, like, there was nothing more in my entire life I've ever wanted than to lift my head up and hold my own baby, and I couldn't do either one because I was so drugged. And I don't remember what happened after that. I remember them wheeling me to, like, a room, kind of, and I started to get my feeling together, and I were like, okay, we're going to try to breastfeed right away. And I remember I couldn't hold him. My arms were too weak, and I was terrified I was going to drop him. I was numb and in shock, and I was so unhappy. And I remember feeling really guilty for being so unhappy because it's supposed to be like the best moment of my life, and I couldn't get him to latch on. My nipples weren't responding, and now I know it's because I had a C-section, but nobody bothered to tell me that. Nobody bothered to say, this is happening because your whole body is numb and your tissue is numb. They were just like, oh, well, we'll get you a nipple shield. And I remember they tried to come in and give him a bath, I think like a day after he was born, and I told them no. And they were like, no. And I said, no, like, he's my baby and you're not giving him a bath. Like, you can leave. And just because I didn't want to ever be away from my son. And I think a part of that was I just felt like that space of like 2 minutes being away from him right after he was born had a profound effect. Like, I still have like these horrible like dreams about like him being separated from me because like the one thing I wanted I didn't get because somebody was sloppy or lazy or forgot, or somebody felt like they had a right to do whatever they wanted. Like, who the fuck cares how big his head was or how heavy he was? Like, he should have been with me in that moment, and he wasn't. One thing that was really validating was they said, and you could even see the little dent in his head, like, when they went in there, he was in the exact position they had moved him out. And they said some babies just move right back. And I have no doubts that that's, especially knowing him now, I have no doubt that they moved him and he moved right back where he was comfortable. And that's how he still sleeps, in his most comfortable. And so his head is like twisted to the side because, you know, the fetal position, your legs are tucked in and your head is tucked down. Well, his head is tucked back, like at a almost like a 90 degree angle into the side, and his legs are sprawled like kind of curled together and up, but also back. So he's like it's like a reverse fetal position. And from the day he was born, when he sleeps on his own, that's how he sleeps. Working with this through my own poetry and my own work was really interesting. That was in some ways also vindicating, but also very frustrating. It's hard to write about something traumatic in like a linear narrative, because it wasn't linear. Even now telling the story, I'm like, oh wait, I forgot this, and I go back and forth. And so I went to get the documents from the hospital. So I got the documents, and the incompleteness of them was shocking at one point, I mean, or on one hand, but there were things that, like, the hospital or the people present didn't tell me, which, like, the cord was wrapped around his neck. And if somebody had told me that, even after, I would have felt a whole lot better, because what would have happened if he had descended? Why didn't anybody tell me? And that has to be a failure of, like, the system. There being distance, because that's what we had requested, but, like, why did nobody tell me they were monitoring the heart more than normal? Because, like, all of these things would have helped. And I remember hearing all the encouraging things, and I understand why, but I also think, like, why didn't anybody say, like, it's even just saying, like, progress is really slow, because here I was thinking I was going to see my baby. And then a strange doctor gets brought in and said the baby hasn't moved an inch, nothing, nowhere. Like, you've done 3 hours of heart, the hardest work you've ever done with your body, and the baby hasn't moved. And I found that to be very frustrating, that no one had told me any of these things that were going on. Then I realized they didn't know the cord was wrapped around his neck until the C-section, but somebody could have told me that after. It would have made me feel a whole lot better about it. Because I was really happy, but I was also really depressed and really sad that I had missed this. Because I don't think I'm going to have more children. I can't even imagine having more children. And so this was my one birth, and everything that could go wrong pretty much went wrong. And it comes back to this expectation where I was so sure that it wasn't going to go wrong. Like, I watched the documentary and I read the books, and, like, it's going to be fine, right? Like, and they... all of the literature says, like, be prepared that anything could happen. And of course, like, yeah, like, of course anything can happen, but not to me, right? Like, it was, that's always where it was, like, not to me. And, you know, my mom had 3 children and my grandmother had 3 children, and, you know, I have big hips. It's fine, right? Like, it's the hospitals and the doctors that make these things happen, not our bodies. And I was so wrong. And I mean, part of the reason I was in so much pain was his position, because he was pressed up against my back, so I was having front labor and back labor. But nobody told me that then either. And I felt like if somebody had said, like, the way he's twisted is why you're in so much pain, like, maybe I would have felt more confident. But that's part of my problem too, is I lost my confidence almost immediately, because it just hurt so much more than I ever expected it to. So my partner told me a lot that really helped me was, like, if we didn't have this medical advancement, you and the baby would be dead. And that's something that, weirdly as it may be, sustains me a lot, to think that it could have been a whole lot worse. But I was talking to a friend about, like, the mommy wars, right? Like, the formula versus breast milk. And I said, like, that's not where it starts. Like, it starts before you've even had a baby, and it starts in the delivery room. And, like, I still see friends or people in, like, mom groups that post, like, I did unnatural medicated labor, like, don't fuck with me or whatever. And it's, like, all in the name of female empowerment. But it's like, does that mean I'm a weak person? Does that mean I'm a weak mother because my baby was stuck and twisted and I couldn't? Like, no, it doesn't mean that. It's fucking hard and it's painful and it's awful. And I felt like it was a huge disservice to me that I was told this was a magical, mystical, beautiful, transcending experience. And I'm sure for some people it is, and great for them. But my experience has been that it's not. And most people that I talk to, it's not. When people say that because the baby is here and healthy, there's nothing to worry about, they're removing the mother from the equation, which makes me really angry, because, like, it didn't happen to the baby. It happened to me, and it happened to my body. And, like, there's a whole patch of skin that I'll never feel again in my life. And, like, I remember having sex the first time after, and I remember having, like, labor flashbacks. Like, nobody told me that was going to happen, but I pushed for 6 hours. Of course it was going to happen. And I couldn't have sex that way for, like, several months. Even now, sometimes, if I'm feeling particularly vulnerable, I can't, because it just reminds me of this horrible traumatic event. And so when people say, well, you have a healthy baby, what does it matter? It happened to my body and to me, and the birth experience is more my experience than it is his. Of course I'm happy that I have a baby. That's why I got pregnant, and that's why I didn't have an abortion or give him up for adoption. But that doesn't mean that something didn't happen to me and that I wasn't there. And Basically, it's how when people ask women how they're doing, what they really want you to say is fine, right? I'm doing fine. And I feel like that's the same thing with like childbirth. If someone does ask you, they don't want to hear like, I felt like my insides were being ripped inside out. They just want to hear like, it was a beautiful, magical experience and it was the best day of my life. And people want this idealized, like, I'm fine. And it's just, I guess what amazes me the most about that is people with children say that. And I was like, well, you were there. Like, did you not feel like it happened to you? But it's just a change in perspective, I guess. It's that whole, like, mothers are selfish if they think about themselves. And it's like, I'm a person and I'm a mother. I'm not one or the other.